Page 666, chapter 20. Okay, again, I think Pasuk or so we learned, but we didn't learn for a while anyway, so. Okay, Vaydaber Hashem al Moshe Lemer, Hashem spoke to Moshe. Val Bnei Yisrael Temar, to the people you should say, to the Jewish people, Ish Ish Mebnei Yisrael, any man, or as Mefarshim explained, it means any man or woman, but it's just an expression, Ish Ish, any Jewish person, or any convert, that's a Jewish convert, that will give his children over to this idol worshipping called Melech, they should die, the people of the land shall pelt him with stones. Basically, he gets what's called skile, gets stoned. Now, Melech was, it was an idol-worshipping service that they had two fires, and they would put the kids in between the two fires. One opinion says they actually burnt the kids in the fire. That was like the service. But most people say that it was like two fires, and they would walk in between the two fires, and this was the way they worshipped that god. So it says whoever does it, the people of the land will stone him. And the reason why the Torah says ish ish, if it applies also to women, so the commentaries explain, because punishment was given by the men. The courts were men, not women. So the Torah is not only speaking, here the Torah is speaking about not the forbidden aspect of it, the Torah here is speaking about the punishment of all the crimes coming up. All the crimes that we're learning about now were already mentioned earlier in the parsha, that is forbidden. Now the Torah is discussing the punishment for all these crimes. So because punishment was primarily done through the courts, through the men, so the Torah uses the expression, Ish Ish Mibnei Yisrael, every man, but it doesn't exclude women. But
were there spectators watching this too, the child going through the fire too?
They needed two witnesses to testify that the guy did it. Right. And they had to be warned.
Well, no, what I'm saying is, like, when they would do this Molech worship, were there people watching?
Yeah.
So wouldn't they be responsible too for not stopping them?
But they were not necessarily Jews.
Oh, I see.
There could have been non-Jewish people doing it, and a Jewish person decided to do this ritual. But again, halachically, you need to be warned by two kosher witnesses, plus they had to testify and warn them. So he says like this, the people, mice you must, shall be put to death. Rashi explains, what's the double expression, mice you must, 666. What's the double expression, mice you must, that the responsibility is on the court. If the court doesn't do it, whoever is there is obligated to do it. That's the double expression. If the unable to do it, then the nation as a whole has to do this to uproot this whole concept of idol worshipping. Ama Oretz, it says the people from the land. Why is there an emphasis on the people of the land? So again, Rashi comments that Ama Oretz, because why is the people kill him? What did he use the expression? Ama Oretz, the people of the land. Because these people, through idol worshipping, contaminate the land. And because they contaminate the land, the punishment has to be done, the Torah says, to purify the earth. And therefore, the Torah is using the expression, the people of the earth have to be the ones to punish the person. Okay, then it says like this, Vani etein es ponai bo ishahu, I myself, God says, will give my time in that person. V'echrati eisei mikerev amei, and I will cut him off from his people. In other words, like this. Really, the courts have to kill you. What happens if the courts don't? For whatever reason, there was no warning, there was no witnesses or whatever. So Hashem says, I will kill the person. Then I will take care of him. Because of his children, he gave to this idol worshipping. In order to defile my sanctuary. And to desecrate my holy name. In other words, when a person worships idols or does any of these idol worshipping shtick, so to speak, they're actually profaning God's temple, they're profaning God's name, and therefore they need to be punished. Okay, and Hashem says, I myself will give for my time. Okay, and if you notice, interesting expression, it says, I will give my face. You know, face represents a deeper level of godliness than, so to speak, other parts of God. Hashem is not saying the expression, my hand will punish you. My face will punish you, meaning this is touching the essential core of what Judaism is all about.
What does?
Giving their kids for idol worshipping things. Now, what happens? What happens if the people will avert their eyes, they'll cover their eyes from that person? In other words, what happens if the courts won't kill him, the people won't kill him? So what do you do then? So it says, the Vilti Hamas says not to kill him. So Hashem says, Vasamti Anias Ponai, but Ishahu Bemishvachti, I will punish not only the person but his family, and so on and so forth. Now, what's this double expression of Halem Ya'alimu? Now, many times in Chumash, the Torah does use a double expression. Yeah, we do find many places. But every time, when the Torah says a double expression, it's to teach us something. Because every word is in Torah is exact. Recently we learned, Hecher Tochiach, you need to admonish. The Torah uses a double expression, teaches us even 100 times. You know, even if you admonish the person and they didn't listen, you have to do it again and again and again. What is this double expression? Him halim ya'alimu. So it says like this. Sometimes, when people look away, instead of punishing somebody for whatever reason it is, Beis Din will be forced to avert their eyes a second time. And this is a very remarkable concept. He uses the expression, Beis Din will make to discharge their responsibility, but people will protest. In other words, like this. This pasuk is teaching us the concept called consistency. If you let somebody get away with something, like a teacher in school, right? A kid does something, gets away with it. Next kid, the teacher stops. So the kid say, hey, come on. The other guy got away with it. Why are you punishing this kid? The other kid got away with it. Right? So what's the problem? There's no consistency. The Torah says now, Vim halim yalimu eseinehem. If Beis Din will avert their eyes once, they're going to be forced by protest to avert their eyes a second time. And then the Torah says, then God says, then I got to mix in. In other words, the Torah says, there must be proper consistency. Can they function properly? And by the way, the olive base, so to speak, the ABC of education, whether it's in the classroom or parents and children, is consistency. Sometimes you don't let, sometimes you can get away with it, sometimes you don't get away with it. So kids scream, it's not fair, they got away with it, why can't I get away with it? And this is what the Torah is alluding to, the Mefarshim is explaining over here. Alem Yalimu, Eseinayim. They need to be consistent, never to let a crime go by. Because once they let it go by once, they'll never be able to take care of it again. This pasuk adds, though, God says, I'm going to punish the person, ube mishpachta, in his family. Right? What does the family do? The guy sinned, what did the family do? So it says, Rashi brings down, that you can assume that if a guy does something wrong, the family backed it. They hid him. They concealed him, they gave him encouragement to do it, they backed him. So the Torah says, when somebody does something wrong, It's the whole family. It's not only the individual. Because the individual has no right, they should have protested. And if the family didn't protest, they're as guilty, 666, they're as guilty as the person themselves. What? How could be what?
How could be that if a child decided to do whatever a child wants to do and the family is trying the best, but they can't stop it?
How about the instance where the daughter was crying that song?
1 second. Do you know that in the Chumash, nowhere does it say that Rivka died? You know that?
Right.
It's only an allusion to it. It's alluded to when they told, you know, Yaakov to come back home. So it says, why did the Torah not mention Rivka's death? So the Medrash says, Rashi says it also in Chumash, because Rivka had a son by the name of Esav. And people cursed Rivka because of Esav. Question, what did Rivka do? Rivka was a tzaddikus. She had a Yaakov. She was one of the matriarchs, right? It's her fault that she had such a terrible son. So whoever you are, hi. So what's the lesson? The lesson is the fact, even though Rivka was a big tzaddikus, right? The fact that she was able to produce a son of Esav caliber had an effect on her also, that the Torah didn't want her death to be published, that people shouldn't curse her. Okay, there's another Rashi in Chumash that you had never have a crime that somebody does, that somehow the family is to blame to a certain respect of the crime of this person. So over here it says, not only him, but even in the family, okay? Or as Rabbeinu Bechaya adds, the reason why the courts didn't punish the person was because of the family, probably influential family, and the courts were afraid to start up with them. So Hashem said, if that's the case, I'm not afraid of anybody. 1 second. V'chrati Eisei, I will cut him off. And all those who stray after him, that means to follow his lead, livnes achrei amelech, to stray after the melech, mikerev amon, from the nation. What?
I don't see how you can come after the rest of the family. I mean, if you have a case of childhood and the father's abusing.
One second. Let me just clarify one more point. The one that is giving the punishment to the family is not the court. Okay. Right? The court only kills the guilty person. Right? The court does not kill the family. Okay. What does the pasuk here say? That if the court doesn't do anything and the people don't do anything, so then Hashem says, I'm going to punish the person and his mishpacha.
Okay.
When it comes to Hashem, Hashem knows if the family is guilty or not. Courts can't tell you if the family is guilty or not. They don't know. Right? Hashem knows the amount of guilt of the family. So when Hashem says, I'm going to punish him and any family member that was somehow connected to this crime, either because they didn't protest. The Gemara says, if you see somebody sinning and you could stop them and you don't, Nitfas ba'esia oven, you get that sin. Because what did I do? You're sinning, nothing personal. You're sinning. I could have stopped you, and I didn't stop you, so I get the sin? Yeah. The Torah says, yeah. You could have stopped him. You didn't. You're as guilty as the person that did it. But that's only in the heavenly courts. In Torah law, and there's another interesting, unique thing, there is no guilty verdict for an accomplice of a crime. Like today, if you rob a bank and you have the getaway car, right? And you don't go into the bank, you don't do anything, you're just driving the car, you're guilty. Right? In Torah law, that doesn't exist. In the courts, between you and Hashem, Hashem says you're helping in a sinner, you know, I'll take care of that. But the courts, unlike in the secular system, the civil system, an accomplice of a crime gets the punishment sometimes of the crime itself. In Torah law, you don't.
So, back to like what Hashem's perspective. If let's say you have a father that's very threatening to the rest of the family, and they're scared to say something about it, Hashem will just take care of the father.
Hey, listen, Hashem's a nice guy. He'll deal with it the way he has to deal with it. But here, the Rabbeinu Bachai is saying that if the family is part of it, then they will also be punished. Okay, then it says like this in Pasuk Vav. Hanefesh shetifna la'eves val yudeinim. This is also different types of idol worshipping that we learned about before. Liznes achareyam, to follow them, to stray after them. V'nasati es panei b'nefesh ahi. Hashem says, I will give that over in that soul, take my time in that soul. V'echrati eisim mikerev amei, and I will cut him off from his nation. The Mefarshim, not here, but before, we learned. If you notice, before it says, in Pasuk Hey, the Torah says, V'chrati eisei, I will cut him off. It doesn't speak about his soul. In this Pasuk, it says, V'nefesh ahi. Okay? So the commentators explain, we learned this a long time ago, there's two types of kares, of being cut off. There's a cutting off that you physically die before a certain age, but your soul keeps going, you know, in Gan Eden where it needs to go. Sometimes, based on the crime, not only does the physical body die, but the soul also gets cut off. The soul, and here the Torah uses the expression, "Banefesh ahi." Unlike in Pasuk Hey, the Torah says actually the soul also gets cut off. Vizkadishem, you have to be holy. You have to sanctify yourself. V'yisim kadeshim, and you need to be holy. Why? Ki ani Hashem alekechem, because I am God, your God. Now, what does this mean? Like, how does this pasuk get in over here? You should be holy. So Rashi says that because the Torah doesn't want you to worship idols, idolatry is forbidden. So the Torah says, listen, you need to be holy by not worshiping idols. Because God says, I am God, your God. If you remember when we learned Aser Sedibris a few years ago, in Parshas Yisrael, it says over there, don't worship any other gods. Because Hashem says, Kel Kanahu. God is a very jealous God. Yeah. So the Gemara says that an Apicurus, non-believer, asked Rabbi Gamliel, what is God such a jealous guy for? God says, don't worship idols because I'm a jealous God. I like, he says, it's a funny expression to say that God is jealous. So Rabbi Gamliel said to him like this. He gave him an analogy. He said, what happens, you can imagine a guy leaves his wife. Okay? But he goes to somebody younger and more beautiful and, okay? It's a terrible crime. But at least you can understand why he did it. Okay? Not justifying it, but you can understand what he did. You leave a young, beautiful wife and you get old to somebody, nothing personal to anybody, old, ugly, old maid, you know, then the husband gets angry. He says, the wife says, you left me for her. You know.
And 99% of, it's true that the men, when they go after another woman, it's uglier, it's more old, and
yeah, that's what the women say.
Men are
not that, though.
Okay, let's leave it at that. Let's not elaborate on this. So Rabbi Gamliel explained to this to Zapikaitis, he said, Hashem is the greatest. You're leaving God for this piece of wood, stone, or whatever it may be. He says, that already Hashem gets angry, because that's already chutzpah. You know, that's already, so to speak, chutzpah, that you're leaving me, Hashem says, for them. You know, they can't do that. So that's what it says over here. Hashem says, V'yisim kadeshim, you need to be holy. Why? Because ani Hashem lekechem. Now the Gemara learns out from here a different thing. The Gemara learns out from here that a person that even thinks about worshipping idols is also punishable. Now the courts can't punish you for thoughts because they don't know what you're thinking. Right? But it says, as a rule, Hashem doesn't punish for thoughts. Like if somebody thinks I'm going to kill somebody, I'm going to think to eat tray, if I'm going to think to desecrate Shabbos, we don't get punished for it because we don't live in a thought world. We live in an action world. When it comes to idol worshipping, the Gemara learns out in Kedushin from this Pasuk that even for thinking of worshipping idols, Hashem punishes you. And Hashem knows what we're thinking, so that's how terrible the thought of worshipping idols is that you even get punished for that. Just for the thought.
But that doesn't exist anymore.
Huh?
That doesn't exist anymore.
What do you mean? Sure it is.
Money,
clothing, food, drugs, people, movies, sports.
But so he's going to be mad at you because you like sports a lot?
Maybe. If the sports takes away from doing what a Jew should be doing, yeah. Yeah.
It's pretty harsh.
It's harsh. But that's why we learned. Recently we discussed in Torah, Aveda Zara is not called Aveda Salilim. In many, many places it's called Aveda Zara. Right? Zara means foreign. A guy called me today. Very interesting. A guy calls me today. He says that there is a shul, a big shul in New Jersey that I don't know, this year, last year, whatever. The rabbi organized that for a certain Shabbos, they stayed not far from Shea Stadium. That's New York Mets, for those that are illiterate. The New York Mets. 1 minute. And they were going to be there for a Shabbos. And Shabbos morning they had a minyan, and they had cholent. And then they went to the Mets game, prepaid, no chil Shabbos, they didn't have to carry anything, they didn't have to, everything prepaid, all arranged, that this should be done. And he said that the rabbi spoke a whole speech about the greatness of that. You know, so he asked me what I thought about it, you know, because somebody, well, how did this come up? Because somebody who became religious was going with a group of friends to Vegas, and they were all Shabbos. He's a shamer Shabbos, so he was going to stay in the hotel. All his friends were going out in Vegas to have a good time, and he asked the rabbi if he can go to a show in Vegas, walking distance to the hotel, prepaid.
Shabbos.
And Shabbos. Yeah, so he's gonna technically be keeping Shabbos, but he's gonna go to a circus or whatever it was over there if he should. So besides the fact, it's definitely not in the spirit of Shabbos. I mean, come on, be realistic. Okay? To go, you know, it's foreign to a Jew. Technically they didn't do any Isser. You know, they didn't do any sin of Chilu Shabbos, but they definitely didn't do things in the spirit of Torah. Right? Besides the fact, another Jew would see this religious Jew in a show in Vegas, and I haven't talked about the modesty of it, but a show in Vegas on Shabbos, he's going to know that the guy prepaid, and I mean, you don't think like that. It just doesn't work. Okay? But we mentioned even more. If you're davening Shemoneh Esrei, you're davening. And in the middle of Shemoneh Esrei, you get a Torah brainstorm. You think about the Rambam or Gemara. You know, it's a very great thought. But you know what? Right now, it's foreign. Now you're supposed to daven. You're not supposed to think about the Gemara or the Rambam. Right now, you're supposed to daven. Right. So, anything which is foreign to a Jew is Aveda Zara. Now, you don't get killed for thinking about a Rambam in the middle of a Shemoneh Esrei. But, you know, but it's still, for the Jew, it's foreign. Everything has its time and place. And as the Rebbe writes in Yom Yom, a very profound thing that you can have, even let's say, the Rebbe uses the expression, you can even have a Hasidic Yetzirah. A Hasidic Yetzirah. And he writes, now you have to daven, comes time to davening, the guy will say, okay, now it's time to learn a little Hasidus. So instead of davening with the minion, he's going to take out a sefer and learn Hasidus. You know, it's very holy, but you know what? It's all from the Yetzirah. Because now you're supposed to be davening. And the Yetzirah is so smart, right? He gets you with holiness. Right now, what is the mission? The mission is to daven. So right now, the Yetzirah comes to you and says, you know, go learn. So it's holy, and I'm a holy guy, I'm learning. The bottom line is, it's a sin. I mean, you don't get lashes for it. But it's wrong, because right now you're not supposed to be doing it. Today, Aveidah Zarah is when people worship things. As we know today, this is what's called the golden calf. It's called money. People worship sports. People worship sports. Okay? There are people that worship food. Okay? There are people that worship a lot of things. Whatever it may be. That is Aveidah Zarah. Today, nobody's going to take a stone image and bow down to it. I mean, come on. You know, years ago they did. But today we have a different Yetzirah, different Aveidah Zarah. So Hashem says that a Jew needs to be holy. Why? Ki ani Hashem Elokeichem, because I am God, your God. And therefore Hashem says, you need to sanctify yourself is by doing, and what the next pasuk is going to say, by doing what Hashem tells us to do. In other words, many people, again, it's all coming from the Yetzirah. Many people think they can sanctify themselves on their terms, so to speak. Like we said, instead of davening, I'm going to go learn. So I'm a holy roller. Hashem says, no, you want to sanctify yourself. It can only be in a way that you're doing what Hashem says. Ushmartem es chukaisai. You have to keep my, observe my mitzvahs. Vasisem esem and do them. Ani Hashem mekadishchem, I am God to sanctify you. He brings down over here a very interesting concept from the Heiliger Rishoner. There are many tzaddikim, and each tzaddik is very holy, and each person has their own way of serving Hashem. There are many tzaddikim that would yell and scream during davening. You know, yell and scream and shake and, you know, all these things. He was very quiet and reserved. He didn't see any outer expression, so to speak, on him. So his disciples asked him, you know, why are you like this? You're so quiet, reserved. You know, why don't we see any show, so to speak? So he said a very interesting thing. In Haftarah Parshas Vayera, there's a story with Elisha and Isha Shunammis. Okay? Elisha used to pass through her house every year, and she said to her husband, let us make a special room for him with a bed and a chair and a table and a light. Let's keep a room designated for him. So he says, so what does it say in the pasuk over there? Elijah, I don't think it's Elisha. It's Elisha. He says Elijah here. Anyway, was a holy man. Okay, so the Gemara says, how did she know he was holy? How did she know he was holy? No flies came. No flies hovered over his table, and his bedding remained clean. Yeah? It doesn't say that she saw him davening with shaking and fervor and all that. It was a very quiet, reserved tzaddik. And that's the way, he says, that's the way sometimes, that's the aved of the person. Sometimes it's people do external shtick to look holy. Yeah, but it's all fake. Like you said, you could take an Italian guy, dress him up with a shtreimel, with white socks, long coat. He's still a guy. He's still an Italian guy. He walks the walk and talks the talk, but Bottom line, he's still a goy. So the Torah says over here, a Jew needs to be holy. Why can't he Hashem alekechem? Because I am God, your God. And he says like this. And by the way, Ushmatim is chukesei doesn't only mean keep them. Here in the English, it translates observe it. But shmarta means to guard it, which is more than observance. Guard it means to protect it in such a way that you will never come to desecrate it. Like making fences around it, and so on. Okay, then the pasuk says like this. Ki ish, ish, any man, but it applies to women also, by the way. Ashi yikalol es aviv es imei, that will curse their father and mother. Meis yumas, he will die. He'll be put to death. And we'll soon see with chenek, usually meis yumas means with chenek choking. Aviv imel kilel, he cursed his father and mother. Damav bay, his blood is upon him. Okay, sorry, the punishment is stoning. Rashi says the punishment is stoning. They learn out from here that it means stoning. Now, what is this? Now, if you take the pasuk literally, the pasuk doesn't make sense. Normally, the word ki means because. Right? In Hebrew, ki means usually because. So it says, be holy, and then it says, because if a man will curse his father and mother, he gets killed. How does because get in there? So the Ramban says two things. Number one, ki means therefore. Not because. Therefore, you have to honor your parents, which was mentioned at the beginning of the parsha. So now the Torah says, because if you curse them, you're going to get killed. Or he says, ki also means because. Because the partners, the parents are God's partners in bringing you into the world. So by respecting God, the Torah says, therefore, you need to respect your parents also. Because the Gemara says three partners in the creation of a person, father, mother, and Hashem. So therefore it says if you curse them. You're not allowed to curse anybody, by the way. But if you curse your parents, then the punishment is death. But again, it has to be warning to witnesses immediately prior to the act. And then the punishment of cursing the parents, unlike you're not allowed to curse anybody, but you don't get killed for it. Doesn't mean you should curse them.
Is it really bad?
When God does something bad, you curse him?
God is God.
Your parents are your parents.
The curse is abusing Hashem's name in them?
Cursing means when you use Hashem's name, correct. In order to be halachically considered cursing the parent, it has to be with Hashem's name.
So if they say something negative about them, they're not cursing them?
No.
And if they wish
them
death?
Wish them death is curse.
But they're not using God's name.
Oh! Anyways, if somebody tells their parents, drop dead, no, they don't get killed. They say, God should make you drop dead. By the way, that doesn't mean you're allowed to do it without Hashem's name. I'm saying then
I understand that. I'm just being trying to see
what happens if a parent is deceased and still
problem. It applies even if a parent is not alive. In fact, Rashi says in the Medrash, why does it say twice? Look in the pasuk. It says, "Ish ki kalol es aviv es imei meis yumas," and then the pasuk again says, "Aviv imei kilel." It's saying the same thing twice. So the Gemara learns out. I mean, the Medrash learns out from here whether you curse them when they're alive or even when they're dead. Even after the parents pass away, it's still forbidden to curse them.
Is it the same punishment?
Yeah. Damav bayit, it gets kilel. You're not allowed to curse parents even after they pass away. But again, the death comes about when the person.
But you can say they did something wrong.
You don't want to get me started, do you? If something happens to a person, the parents did something terrible to you. The parents, whatever. The parents did it or God did it?
Both.
No.
God.
Who did it to you?
God.
No. If somebody smacks you in the face, God forbid, if somebody smacks you in the face, God did it or they did it?
God wanted that the person is smacking.
No. No, that's not true. God didn't want the person to smack you. God wanted you to get smacked. The person that did it, God didn't want, because he had free choice not to do it. But if you got smacked, God wanted you to get smacked.
Sounds like the same thing.
No. No. Oh, come on. We discussed this so many times already.
No, we did, but it's just
a semantic.
So, why is a person cursing the parent, even if they do something terrible? It's Hashem who did it. So,
and the same punishment is for the grandchildren, for the
grandparents. No, this is only children and parents, not grandparents. You're not allowed to do it, by the way. But the death is only for parents, not for grandparents. Yeah.
I always wonder about something also. You know, it mentions in the Torah about not communicating with the dead and things like that.
Right.
So what about resurrecting the dead? Like, we heard many stories about in the Gemara and stuff about people who tried to.
Yeah, but they didn't talk to the dead.
Yeah, but they brought them back to life. I mean,
so
then they talked to them.
They did things. It's not communicating. They used to bring up the spirits from the dead.
Oh, I see.
Like the famous story with Shaul HaMelech and all that, you know. But then, that was what's forbidden.
Oh, that wasn't forbidden?
It was.
It was.
It was
forbidden.
I'm saying. But he did
it anyway. Huh? Because Shaul knew what he was doing. Huh? There are many stories about tzaddikim in Tanakh. He had Shaul HaMelech, you have different places where tzaddikim did bring back. There's a whole story, was in Rami Prague, about a Christian kid was killed in a blood libel, and the only way to prove it, the Rami Prague, in front of the Goyish court, they brought the dead Christian child in that they accused the Jews of killing. Okay? And the Malmi Prabhu told him to bring the dead kid to court. And in the court, in front of the Goyish judge, the Malmi Prabhu turned to the body and says, "Get up and tell us who killed you." So he got up and ended up to be the priest and, you know, I mean, whatever it was. So there are certain cases, you know, me and you shouldn't do it. Okay. Don't do this at home, right? Calling parents names is also forbidden, but it's not the concept of cursing them.
Calling them names or calling their name just by their name?
Both.
Who makes this thing? God did it, right?
What?
All this talent to call the dead body and all.
Yeah, it's all coming from Kedusha. Yeah. It exists in holiness, and it exists in evil. Because any powers that exist in holiness exist in evil. Therefore you have witchcraft of all these, Eve and Yudaini, they used to speak to the bones under the arm, and all these things. There is a power of evil. What?
In certain instances, you have to use your father and mother's name. Are you allowed to write out their name?
Yes.
You are.
You're not allowed to call a parent by the first name.
Right.
But you can say, when you get an aliyah, right?
Right.
So you're telling them your father's name.
Right.
Or somebody asks you, what's your mother's name? You can say what her name is. You can't call them.
Oh,
you can't call them by their name. That's forbidden. Okay, then the pasuk says like this. Again, this paddock is all going to all the things at the beginning of Parshas Kedeshim that the Torah then said it was forbidden. Now the Torah is speaking about the punishment. A man who will commit adultery with a man's wife, a sheyina fesachus reyu, he'll commit adultery with his fellow's wife, meisumas aneiv in office, the adulterer and the adulteress, meaning the man and the woman, are put to death, and the Gemara learns out that's from chenek, meaning strangulation. But this is only when they're both over bar mitzvah and bas mitzvah. One second. If a man, let's say a girl was married, like in the olden times they used to get married before bas mitzvah, right? If a man will commit adultery with a married 10-year-old girl, right? Rivka got married at 3, right? If a man will commit adultery with a 10-year-old girl, because she's married, he gets death, she doesn't, because she's a minor. She's under bas mitzvah. She's not, you know, responsible for her actions. But, as a rule, both die. Now, this din only applies if they're both willingly involved. Right? If a married woman, God forbid, is raped, so then there's no death on her side, because the Torah says she was called onus, and she wouldn't. This is only speaking when it was willing on both parts.
What's the difference between a man's wife and his fellow's wife?
It's the same thing. Why the Torah is doubling it, it's very interesting. All these things, the Torah is using double expressions the whole time. Number one, it probably, halachic, because halacha is, and again, not that it's allowed in any way, but if a Jewish man commits adultery with a non-Jewish married woman, it's not adultery of a married woman. If a non-Jew commits adultery with another non-Jewish man's wife, then it is adultery.
If a non-Jew...
In other words, like this.
A Jewish woman?
One second. For a Jew, adultery is only when the woman was married, halachically,
and Jewish.
If it's a non-Jewish woman who's married, trust me, it's not allowed for a lot of reasons. Okay, Baal Adam is canoim pagan by with all the things, but it doesn't have a din of a married woman. For instance, and according to halacha, if a Jewish woman was married to a non-Jew, okay, you have many cases. A Jewish man, a woman is married to a non-Jew, then they separate, the woman doesn't need a get. Because for her, there was no marriage with this non-Jewish man. Same thing, if it would be a Jewish man with a non-Jewish woman. It would be the same thing. They don't know, there's no need of a get. Okay? For Goyim, though, if they're married, and they're civilly even, so in for Goyim, that's considered a wife. Okay? If a Jewish man will commit adultery with a married Jewish woman, okay, and they have a kid, the kid's a mamzer. Correct? It's a mamzer. If a non-Jew will have relations with a married Jewish woman and they have a kid, the kid's not a mamzer.
Exactly.
Because in Jewish law, marriage only exists between Jew and Jew, not between Jew and non-Jew. According to Torah, for non-Jews, marriage exists between non-Jews. That's why one of the seven Noahide laws is adultery, right? For a goy, right? One of the seven Noahide laws. So, they never had a chuppah. Nevertheless, if it's designated as his wife, then there is a din of adultery.
So technically what happened with Dina... With
the, what is it,
Hamor? Shem.
Shem,
right. And that, was that really
a...
I mean, it wasn't a valid marriage, was it?
Or, he didn't marry her, he just raped her.
Yeah.
He wanted to marry,
they
didn't let.
Right.
But again, this is just saying, that, so therefore the Torah is saying, Asher, Yenefes, Ashes, Rei, Ehu, which would apply only to a Jew. I'll answer you. Which would only apply to a Jew. So if it would be a non-Jewish woman, it wouldn't be Mesu Masayinev on the office, they wouldn't do it. Another thing we discussed, if you remember, we discussed a while ago about Mrs. Eliyahu Navi. Is she allowed to remarry? Or Mrs. Rabbi Yeshua ben Levi, who also didn't die, went alive to Gan Eden. This is a discussion in Halacha. If Mrs. Eliyahu Navi is allowed to get remarried.
Sure.
Huh?
Yeah, of course.
It's not so simple.
Why not?
Husband didn't die.
He's
in Gan Eden. What are you going to do? Wait for him to come back? You're living on earth, you're not living in Gan Eden. Gan Eden is...
And if a woman's husband disappears...
Yeah, well, if he disappears...
But living in New York...
Then Seguna.
If he's in Gan Eden, and she knows he's in Gan Eden...
How she know? She saw him there.
He's going to be too happy.
How does she know?
Huh?
How does she know?
Well, you said she is. He is.
The halacha is that she could remarry. Okay? But in halacha, it's not such a simple concept. The question is, the Gemara says, Mishnah says, in the Kedusha we're learning, a woman is acquired one of three ways, v'keines atzma, beget u'bemisa sabal. And a woman acquires her freedom, so to speak, either with the get, or if the husband passes away. Right? So there's a question in halacha, when the husband passes away, okay, and the Gemara says now she could remarry, correct? What permits her to remarry? Is it the act of dying, or is it there's no husband?
Well, if he's dead,
for instance, no. When a man gives a get to a woman, there's an act involved. He's giving her a get that allows her to remarry, right? Now, when a husband passes away, that the wife is allowed to remarry, correct?
Right.
Now, the question is, what is allowing her to remarry? Is it his act of dying? Or is it the fact that there's no husband?
No husband.
Well, 1 second. If it's the fact that he died, the act of dying permits her, Eliyahu Navi never died.
But
he never died.
But people don't come back from Gan Eden. Too happy.
Eliyahu Navi comes here very often. Every bris, every comes every bris, every seder.
Do you see him?
Sure, don't you?
He comes in another dimension. Doesn't come as a living human.
But that's the question: what permits the death of the husband for a woman to remarry? Is it the act of dying? Is it, in other words, do you need an active act, or is a passive act enough? By get, there's an active act. You give her a get. By death, is it the fact that the act of dying permits her? Or is it the fact that there's no husband?
Both.
So that's the difference if Mrs. Eliyahu Navi could remarry. Because he never died. He never died. So if death is what allows her to remarry, then she can't remarry. If the fact that there's no husband... As the pasuk over here says, "Aishus Re'ehu." So they say, if there's no Re'ehu, then she's not Aishus Re'ehu. But it doesn't have to be that he died; then she would be allowed to remarry.
What about for the man?
Huh?
For the man.
The man can have many wives.
So who gives her the permission to remarry?
Not nowadays. Don't worry about it.
Who gives her the permission?
One's enough. What?
If she has a question, she has to go to a big rabbi.
Right.
And who gives her the permission? He does.
Who?
Whoever, whichever big rabbi she goes.
If what?
Visiting to get remarried today.
To get remarried to the Eliyahu Navi. If she, let's say she goes to a rabbi or she goes to a court.
Eliyahu Navi's wife.
Mrs. Eliyahu, how would she marry? She goes to a rabbi and she says, I did not see my husband.
In Evan Ezra, it's discussed in the, not in the Shulchan Aruch itself, in the side poskim of the Shulchan Aruch, in Simon Yud Zayin, they discuss. This case of Eliyahu Navi's wife. And they most of them passed that she could remarry. Mm-hmm. What?
It's kind of the topic, but let's say a person asks you what your parents' name is.
Yeah.
Are you allowed to say my parents' name?
Yes.
You are allowed to.
Yeah. What?
In the case before, if a non-Jew had an affair with a Jewish married woman, so in that case he would be killed, right?
In the time of Beis Din, he would be killed, but the kid wouldn't be a mamzer.
Yeah.
A different version. If a parent is asking the child at young age, 5, 10, 15, to call the parent by his name and her name,
he shouldn't do it.
But he's five and 10, and he does not know. I mean, he listens to
mom. Okay, so when he gets older, he'll learn. He'll know that he's not allowed to do it. Even though a parent could be meichel technically, but it says in Allah you shouldn't do it. Okay. V'ish yeshi, pasuk yud aleph. V'ish yeshi yishkav v'seish yourself if a man who have relations with his father's wife, which means not even if it's not his mother. His father remarried, but it's his father's wife. Eves aviv gila, he revealed the shame of the father. They both get killed. The blood is upon themselves, meaning they caused it to happen. And so even though it's not your mother, it's only your father's wife, it's also forbidden. If a man will have relations with his daughter-in-law, both of them will die. Again, this is when it's willing from both sides. Tevel asu, they have committed a perversion. The mayhem bomb, their blood is in them. Okay? In other words, why is this called tevel? Why is this called perversion and otherwise not? He said because it's against, this is what Rashi explains. It's against the natural order of things for a father and a son to live with the same woman. So therefore, over here the Torah says tevel. In fact, you see, even in the next pasuk, isha sheyishka v'zochem ishka ve'isha, a man who will live with another man, like living with a woman, te'eva asu shneim, it's an abomination for both, meisi masu, both die, demei ambam, by the way, this is one of the adulterous forbidden relations, which is forbidden even for a goy. A goy does not have the same restrictions on relations that Jews do, but one of them is even homosexuality is forbidden for a goy too.
But does this mean on women too? This doesn't say anything about women.
It's not that bad.
A lot of lesbian women.
Doesn't yeah?
Same.
Didn't know.
Same.
They didn't read this page.
It's not the same.
No?
It's from different source.
It's a different source. In Parshas Achrei Meis, we read it in Yom Kippur.
Okay.
Says over there in Shishi in here. We read it Shabbos after, I mean Yom Kippur afternoon from right. Before Maftayena. Kamasi Eretz what?
648 in Artsford.
Remember it? Kamasi Eretz Mitzrayim Shishaftem Alei Sasu. You shouldn't do like the Egyptians used to do, and the Rambam from the Gemara says that it means Noshim Esalsalu Zuim Zu. The women would do things to each other. So even though the Torah speaks only about male and male, but that's death sentence. Lesbians is not death sentence, but it's still biblically forbidden. It's still biblically forbidden, but it's not Moisim Moshe, they don't get killed. But what's interesting, out of all the forbidden relations, out of all the forbidden, we learned this when we were talking earlier in Parshas Kedeshim, that the Torah says is to'eva an abomination, is only by this one. By adultery, the Torah doesn't say it's an abomination. By brother and sister, the Torah does not say abomination. By mother-in-law, all the forbidden relations, the Torah never uses the word to'eva, abomination. The only time the Torah uses the word to'eva is by what's called Mishkav Zachar, male and male. It's the only time the Torah uses the word abomination.
Why is that?
Because the Torah is saying, basically, that it's not a sickness, it's not an illness. We're talking about not the tendency, the acting on it. We're not talking about the desire to do it, let's say. We're talking about the acting out on the desire. The Torah says is an abomination. It's not an illness, it's not
So if a person just identifies himself as homosexual, that's not...
It's not guilty as charged until he acts on it. But then the Torah calls it to'eva, it's an abomination.
What?
It's an abomination.
What is?
Homosexuality.
But isn't it also saying that to
animals? No.
Does it?
No, because the Torah says in the few psukim, Ish ashayit ish shchafti bebehema, meisyumas, ish ashayitikra bekol behema.
How is that not an abomination?
The Torah doesn't call it an abomination. If you look in Chumash, the only time the Torah uses the word abomination by forbidden sexual relations is man and man.
And that's what you say about women too.
It's forbidden, but the Torah doesn't call it to'eva like it does by a man. Okay, Moisimus and Mambam, they both get killed. Okay, we'll just start the next passage. If a man will marry a woman and her mother, so it means a mother and a daughter and a mother, either way, you kill them both, meaning like this. The Torah uses the word here, which means this only capital punishment is if you marry a woman and then you live with the mother or the daughter. But if you never married any of them, there's no capital punishment. Because the Torah says, Ish ki yikach es isha, you marry a woman, then you cannot have relations with the daughter or the mother. But it's only if they got married, otherwise this din doesn't apply.
This pasuk seems to express the type of death penalty, whereas the other ones don't.
Is there a difference? No, it's different punishments. This one is sveifa. Regular adultery is chenek. Sometimes he gets stoned. The Torah discusses each one differently.
Blood upon himself and
the man bum means he brought it upon themselves. Well, it depends. Sometimes most humans is chenik. Sometimes it depends what it is. Okay.